Hey, welcome to the third show with Brian, where I talk to anybody that I want to about anything that I want to, and everybody just has to listen to it or delete it. I have some friends.
I have no choice.
I know. Well, hey, you know, they can delete it if they want to, but I think people like this show so far because it's different from the other show. But this one's going to be political. I'm going to tell you early on.
Me making the Jared Leto face, it's like, this is a different kind of show.
Yeah. Well, this is, I wanted one where I didn't feel, I want to say I got from Discourse Collective, the podcast, I got Marcus and Malloy on here.
Hi, guys. Hey, what's up, guys?
All right.
We're in the Ohio mansion, whatever you guys got going on.
We don't have a mansion. Have you seen the picture of the Columbus basement?
Yeah, it's basically Fight Club down there.
Yeah, like the roof's caving in, but you've got like buckets everywhere collecting water.
He fucking said he cleaned it this weekend. He sent me a thing. It was like, I'm cleaning this basement this weekend. I was like, well, look at you, buddy. every LaCroix, I drink LaCroix when I record, and every single can that I've recorded, I drink two through every show, and every single can I've drank down there is still down there.
That's the dedication of a monk, dude.
We're going to be in the Smithsonian someday.
Yeah.
Well, we go on Facebook Live and Periscope, and I crush cans because I think it's like the dumbest. Like, it sounds like something like the dumbest people in the world would want to watch.
No, dude. Okay. Do you know those, like, there's like these people who make can crushing machines? Like, and they'll always get posted as like, ooh, this is super satisfying to watch.
Cause oh my God.
They're like a little like machine gun looking thing with like a ring of cans lined up. And then this crusher just like smashes them one after another. And I'm like, this is like the dumbest thing imaginable, but somehow like I'm into it.
Like, have you ever watched Hydraulic Press Channel?
My daughter recently started showing me satisfying videos, and hydraulic press. I watched them crush I think it was a golf ball, and it fucking ruled, man.
Yeah. It's like, it just speaks to my like inner teenager jackass wannabe person, like just this guy crushing random shit.
I love to fucking smush things.
Crush it's shit. Like, I like to like, break shit.
It's so clinical too, because like, it's not like, oh, he just takes a bat to this fucking thing and just beat. No, it's like, it takes a while. It's like this machine that moves really slowly, and it just smush.
There's suspense.
I want one.
Yeah.
I want one. And I think like when the Patreon hits a certain amount, you'll start seeing a lot of street fight themed hydraulic press videos.
That's going to be awesome. I can't wait. You could put like Sesame Street words in there, like patriarchy and capitalism.
Oh, that would own, yeah.
Okay, I like that one. My guess is like, my big thing with Street Fight is that like once we make enough money to get a space, I keep like getting in Brett's ear and being like, let's get like tools and lifts and let poor people work on their cars there. You know what I mean? Or work on their friends' cars. Because when you fucking... I'm pretty broke now, but when your car goes, that's it. That can destroy fucking everything when you're poor.
Yes.
And so I keep saying I want to do that because I want to help the community, of course, but I also like miss hanging out with blue collar people since I started doing podcaster as a
job. You can become like a miniature irony poisoned Andrew Carnegie. Like, here's Street Fight Hall. It's where we smash cans and build cars.
I just have this dream that like, and I don't know, I'm not really sure if it's even a reasonable thing, but like that if you could, poor people that can work on cars but can't afford a tools in a garage would maybe cut other poor people whose cars are broke down, would maybe cut them a break on fixing their car. And if like I can facilitate that.
Pal, that is called a workers' collective, and
I have
a little ideology from the land of China that might interest you.
Yeah,
what if we had like everybody in the country like fixing cars for their friends, sort of blue collar, also fuck sparrows and cockroaches, like we just killed them all.
Yeah. Oh, so like sparrows and cockroaches you're exterminating too? We're buying your exterminator.
Yeah, it's like a combination car. Okay, we crush cans, we build cars, we kill sparrows.
Okay. Okay.
This is the Maoist anarchist workers co-op. We're putting our differences aside to just make the whole process more efficient.
See, I don't know how familiar you guys are with what we do, the ins and outs of what we do. But one of the ideas we came up with, I'm running for mayor.
Fuck yeah.
I've heard about that. That's awesome.
We're both running for mayor as a tag team. And we're going to
twice the votes if you have two people.
Yeah. And
math just works out.
One of the ideas we had on the air was to combine the Department of Sanitation with the police and call it the Department of Sanitation and Policing, because I feel like the cops could be doing so much more than bothering people. Oh, so I want them
have
to
the
be
cops like, sweeping streets and shit.
Cleaning windows and shit. They could be, and I don't know if it's like this where you are, but in Columbus there are car parts and couches and shit all over the side of the road. And I will see cops clocking people for speed right next to a big pile of trash on the side of the freeway. I'm like, you could be doing something useful right now.
Every cop like gets a holster for a gun and then a big like cartoon shaped holster for like a broom.
Yeah, they see their back. they seem to love like being out there and being police. It seems like we could add a little bit to their job.
Wait. You need to frame it like the garbage like fucked up somehow and you're like, go kick their ass. You see that couch, fucking filthy stupid couch, get let's haul that shit out of here. And everybody's like, yeah, we can go brutalize it.
Cleaning up the streets literally.
yeah for real. I think they should. I mean like,
he was one day from retirement, but the couch was too heavy and he slipped a disc.
Well, that's not too bad. I've slipped a few discs in my
day. Yeah.
I have the sprightly young spine of a newborn. My back's fucked up all the time.
When you get old, you'll get.
But like, yeah.
There's this thing when you get old where you pinch nerves. You just
go. Oh, good God. Oh, fuck. No way. Do yeah, not like, want to get like to a, ever... like
your whole leg gets numb and it's the most awful thing to have a pinched
fucking
nerve.
You guys are fucking exactly. Like grandpas.
We are. We're old.
I lifted boxes there for like I basically tossed boxes around the basement for like 6 months there, and I was just pinching nerves every like 2 weeks.
Were you not lifting with your knees?
I never have. Okay.
OSHA isn't real. OSHA is not real. You can lift with any part of your body, really.
I've come out in favor of OSHA recently, which is odd for an anti-government guy like me, but having also done some work where I'm like, they would definitely let you be real dangerous if they could.
Yeah. OSHA's great. I heard you supporting OSHA and like I was totally in agreement, because you ever see like I saw like pictures of like warehouse workers and they have like one fucking forklift stacked on top of another forklift and they're like, somebody's gonna die here. See, like yeah,
OSHA's like the collective parent of blue collar jobs, where they're like, no, John, you can't pick up a forklift with another forklift. That's dangerous.
Don't put a fucking ladder on a table. Don't ever put a ladder on a fucking table. You know what I did when I was a cable?
Unless this is EC Dub.
Well, yeah, that's rad.
Yeah.
When I was a cable guy, I used to climb trees to get to the pole, which is so fucking dangerous and totally against OSHA. Like, they're not into you climbing trees. But like, you know, you call your boss and you're like, I can't get to the pole to do this thing. And they're like, well, you have to. So... Yeah, I don't know what to tell you there.
OSHA's fun too for like reporting workplaces, because you kind of do get to bully your boss in a little sort of like a removed way. I know there's like a lot of people who, at least I've seen, love to write up OSHA violations.
I have never heard of that, but listeners, please, you can do that. That is something you could definitely do to make your boss's life shitty.
This is a PSA. Join the IWW and then aggressively write up OSHA violations on everything. Fuck you.
I worked in corporate. I worked at Progressive Insurance and I worked at another smaller outfit. And I would like people, like supervisors hated me because I would fight back against like task creep where they like give you more work. And I would also like go over state laws, like state working laws. Like, so they'd send out an email like, well, everybody's got to work until 2 p.m. before they take a lunch. And I'm like, actually, that's against the law. And like, they would just get all pissy about it.
Did you ever tell people how much you make? That infuriates them.
Always, always tell everyone you're.
Yeah, tell everybody what you make.
With clap emojis, tell your coworkers what you make.
I just think that, like, if you think about it for like 2 seconds, but they're smart. Like, the capitalists are super smart, or the people that run the offices are super smart, because they'll be like, it's rude actually to tell people what you make. Like, that's not even
a conversation. I was having this conversation with my mom on the like on a drive, because she was like, we were talking about school teachers, and like in California, at least, you can look up the salary of literally any like public employee. And she was like, that's kind of creepy. You know, like, I don't want people knowing how much I make. I'm like, yeah, but if you're paid like shit and you know you're paid like shit, but you don't have a way to like figure that out, you're going to stay being paid like shit.
Yeah. Like, if you can't compare with the people in the office with you, like, I mean, like, the disparity can be crazy. Like,
yeah.
When I worked at the cable company, I've told the story a few times. When I worked at the cable company, I told a guy how much I made, because he'd been working there about the same amount of time as me, and he had gotten 2 promotions over me, and he's making $11 an hour, and I was making $16 an hour.
Jesus.
I told him.
That poor fucking guy.
I told him.
I like that. Yeah. those promotions probably like raised his pay like 50 cents, and he was like, fuck yeah, I'm moving up.
Well, and the work was like, and we're talking about like on call every 3 weeks, a lot of extra work, like you were saying, task creep. That's all it is, really. They're like, guess what, buddy, you got a promotion, here's 50 cents.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any promotion that includes additional duties with like a 3% raise is just fuck you, here's more work.
My wife keeps getting promotions without raises, and it drives her fucking crazy.
I can't imagine.
That sounds like hell.
Yeah. I mean, I refused a lot of promotions at my last few jobs. Like,
it was no, like, thank you. No, I'm sticking my head down in the trenches here.
I'm too dumb for this. You've overestimated.
In a blue collar job, if you accept a promotion, then you're probably going to be breaking your body a lot worse. So it's so easy to turn them down. It's just like, I don't want to dig holes now. You know?
God.
I would like to dig one hole a day, not three, and I'm going to negotiate down.
Yeah, I hate being on call. I think on call is probably the worst possible situation for a person, even if you work in an office. It's just...
It's like an anxiety nightmare to be on call.
It's like you've been gifted with a mental illness that you get paid to have.
Or it's like... It chased me out of, I wanted to be a social worker there for like a hot minute when I graduated from college, but I went and did a couple interviews and they started talking about being on call, and I was like, fuck this. I guess I don't care about people that much.
I want to be there for you, but not that much.
Can I be there for you like during like daytime hours?
Baker's hours.
You can take care of your fucking self. I mean, yeah. I get that like some jobs like social workers probably should like have at least like on call, or maybe just have a shift system that works. But like, fuck, you know, you don't like lay all that responsibility, like EMTs, you know, like they're paid like shit. They have no union. They get stepped on by everybody and they're like hospitals and everything. And basically they drive around in these cars that cost people like $1,000 to step inside of, and it's like, you know, something's fucked up in that. Something's not working.
Don't they make like $11 an hour? Oh, yeah, like no, they make bucks or something. They're just like lower than.
They're literally saving lives, like in the trenches.
Yeah, like more than anyone else in a hospital system. Like aside from like surgeons and shit, like they're the ones who get you to the hospital. Like you remove that, like doesn't matter how good your fucking hospital is.
Is
no
this
can a, fucking get there?
Is this a subcontracting thing? Is this one of the things where the city fucking contracts? Because in Columbus, all of them are different. There's no like public ambulance system here.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's like that everywhere.
No, but a lot of EMTs are just kind of like contract workers for hospitals.
Like gypsy ambulances.
Well, that's what they look like here. Some of them, man, you're like,
yeah, and they have like funky names on the side, like Speedy Health or something. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Zippity doo die, you didn't die.
it's like garbage men. When I was a kid, like they would be like garbage men make a shitload of money, and then they started contracting that out, and these businesses just.
Yeah, you remember there was that day when you're a kid and you're like. Garbage men make how much?
Yeah.
And then
you like, get to crush shit all day? Fuck yeah.
You know what? It's a perfect job. You get to crush cans, you drive around in a big truck, and you get paid like a certain amount. Like you get paid a deal.
And the truck stinks and people hate it when you're in front of them.
You get to be like Oscar the Grouch, but like on wheels. Fuck you, kids.
And it's fun. I mean, that kind of work isn't too, it's fun sometimes. I mean, I don't think I'd like to do it when it was snowing or something like that, but fuck man, I'll do a spring day. If you want me to go out
anyway, you're driving to your job anyway.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
When I moved to Colorado, cause I grew up in Philly and everything here is city, city, city. And then I moved to Colorado and like we had private trash, private water, private everything. I'm like, you know, I have to pay for trash. Like what the fuck? Like it didn't even make sense to me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I pay for private water.
Move to California. Everything's private.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Oh, is it really? Well, think the electric. I mean, I want the electric companies collectivized, or nationalized. I'm just like,
I want PG&E.
Shouldn't have bills. You know what I
mean? Yeah.
Yeah. More the PG&E should be fucking dropped into the Pacific Ocean. They are, I mean, like where I live, like they've poured like hexavalent chromium. Into the fucking water supply like 100 times, and every time it's just like they come into the court and the judge is like, oh, you guys again, okay, like they dish
naughty
out they dish out a couple $1 million and like I'm sorry notes to people who have like third limbs and stuff now.
Oh god.
And then they're like, what are you gonna do? Like you gotta make energy, right? And then they charge you like incredible amounts for it.
AEP has bought out neighborhoods so everybody can move because they poison the fucking air. So like that, they put those big. There was like a city in Ohio that had those big power things, and they were just like, these things are giving fucking people cancer. So they just bought. They just said, "Hey, can you guys move away from here?" Gave everybody the money to do it.
I like how that's their solution.
Yeah, like we look at the Soviet Union, we're like, oh, they blew up Chernobyl. What dumbasses. And it's like, yeah, well, we do that like hundreds of times, but we just like say like, just please move. You don't have to, but you know, you don't want cancer. I'd move.
Well, what eminent about that domain? Eminent domain is
fuck. Yeah.
They can just take it. They can just take your shit.
What about that town in Pennsylvania, Centralia? Like they
The Centralia coal mine fire.
Yeah, there's like literally right now, there's a whole town in Pennsylvania where the underground coal reserves are just burning and they're going to burn for like the next 100 years. Mm-hmm. So they basically had to shut down the town, cancel its zip code, and everybody had to move away. And like they like canceled its, like they closed off its interstate exit. And it's basically just like a modern ghost town where there's a giant coal fire raging under the earth for the
next. And it like smokes, you know? It's like there's like fire in the ground. You just kind of like, oh, look at that.
Is it like, could I go there and look at it? They like
it? Oh, yeah, well, they don't encourage it, but you can go there.
Well, there's a place that we in Halloween, we did a live show that was based on us going ghost hunting. So we went to a bunch of different haunted places in Ohio, and one of them was called Helltown. And it was a town. It's fucking sweet,
that's
right?
That's a the share zone image.
It's actually called... Helltown. It is called Helltown too, right? But they changed the name to Boston at some point, but we just still call it Helltown. There's a fucking Helltown road there.
That's awesome.
And it's just a bunch of houses and a church. It was just the smallest little town that just abandoned, is gone. Like the government kicked everybody out. They said they were going to put a national park there, but then they were like, nah, never mind. And just didn't fucking do it. So there's all kinds of conspiracies about what goes on there. I can tell you it's nothing.
Like, I'm super into urbex. Like I think it's like basically like our own dystopic exploration that like we millennials can engage in is just like crawling through the ruins of late capitalism.
It's fucking cool. There's a there's like a flight of steps to go underground in downtown Columbus, and we don't have a subway, and to my knowledge have never had a subway. And I'm just like, where do those go, man? I want to go down there so bad. I mean, you can look it up. It's just a bunch of graffiti. But it's cool. Ghost hunting is really fun. But like,
you got to go to like the really old parts of America to get proper urban exploration. Because like, you go to a place that's like built up in the 70s. The oldest stuff there is like just pieces of wood that are rotting in some field. Like, you go to like a big urban city and you'll find like, oh, here's where they hid the bodies in the Civil War. Okay.
Yeah, there's so many places in like dead malls is another thing.
Oh,
it's like,
yeah,
that's incredible.
That's some Romero shit.
Have you ever seen the that mall in China that they just cannot fill with stores? So it's like, it's basically the most enormous mall that's ever been built, and it has all these amazing stores, and it's just empty. And yeah, people just go there to wander around and just look at the failures of, I don't know, whatever's going on in China. It's not capitalism or fucking communism, whatever it is.
Yeah, I used to spend so much time on a dead mall's webpage, just fucking scrolling through pictures of it when I worked in a call center. I couldn't stop.
That is the most depressing situation to be like. You're working on a call center and your like hobby is looking at like failed malls.
Yeah, I have a real fucking weird thing about old buildings and like old big empty buildings. Like, it can just be an old store. There's a store. There was a hardware store called Heckinger here, and they closed. Yeah,
I remember Heckinger.
And they closed in like probably 1995, I think. And the building is still there, and there's nothing. It's never been touched. Nothing else has ever been in the building, and that building fucking gives me the creeps.
I have a vivid memory. We had a chain toy store around on the East Coast called Kitty City, and they went out of business, and they had a going out of business sale, and my dad took my sister and I on the last day, and I just remember walking through these aisles of like picked over items and like old stock from like 10 years ago that they threw on the shelves for like $2, and it was like the weirdest. It was like, usually you go to a toy store and it's like a fun, happy experience, but it was just like unsettling.
Welcome to Kitty City. Would I interest you in this Atari?
They're selling the shelves. They're selling the fucking shelves. I was just looking at pictures.
I got a great urban exploration story.
Okay. I was just looking at pictures of old Blockbuster on the last day, like all the Blockbusters on the last day, and that was fucking, I mean, like selling the TVs that they used to show the movies on.
Make me an offer.
How much could that cost? It's like a 30-year-old TV at that point.
Just trying to get rid of all the stock. You're just trying to get rid of fucking everything. And it's just the movies that are left over that nobody wanted to buy for anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Sacramento, which is where I am right now, actually, there's like the Port of Sacramento, which is this huge turning basin for like big shipping container boats. And in the Vietnam War, they used to send tanks and like heavy artillery stuff in these cement barges, and they're all serial numbered, so you can like look up like what year it's from. So they left like 30 of them floating in the Sacramento Turing Basin, and they kind of like drifted over to the shore, and like someone I guess lashed them to like a bunch of trees, so they're just sitting there now. And I used to like row on this team there, and it was like next door to this like sort of like dump, and I'm like, okay, you know, I gotta check this out. So I go over there and I spend like a week or two just like picking through shit there, and I find like old boats just like fucking like growing trees in them, like stereo equipment lying all over the place, a bunch of welding stuff, and I'm like, okay, this is really cool. Like, I'm taking pictures of everything. But then there's this barge just like really far out there, and I can see it's like got tons of shit on it. It's like piles of stuff. So I'm like, okay, I got to get out there. So I get one of the little like metal bottom boats, you know, like the ones that you just like, they're just like sheet metal basically.
Yeah.
get on one of those, paddle my way over there. And I swear to fucking God, there's an airplane dangling from the top of this metal box.
And so you had an airplane at that point.
Yeah, no, I first thought seeing that was like, okay, I need to go get like a U-Haul. I'm gonna fucking like move this barge over to the shore, and I'm gonna get this airplane out. It was like a little one-seater airplane, right? So I call up a friend. He comes down. He like, I get him on the little boat thing. I row him out. I'm like, how are we gonna get this out of here? And we spend like 5 or 6 hours like trying to figure out how to untie it. But also, there's like radio equipment, like speakers, like knives and shit, like tons of like crazy stuff, like on this barge.
Is this all military stuff?
Yeah, like it was like weird, not like Vietnam War, but like mid-80s army surplus.
Wow.
And so we're piling it all on the boat like fucking pirates, you know, like piling up our. We start like we literally are using like one paddle, and we're like rowing it back, and it's taking ages because like the boat's like filled. And I was like, you know, I'm gonna learn to weld. I took a welding machine and just put it in the fucking. So we get to the shore, and this dude standing on the hill that like the port is connected to, he's like shining a flashlight at us, and it's like 5 in the afternoon. And he's like, I'm placing you under citizen's arrest.
Oh God,
you are violating my property. And I'm like, dude, what the hell? No, this is definitely not your property. And there's like signs everywhere. It's like, this is abated property of California. Like, this is a dump, basically. So it's like, it's public property. It turns out this guy lived in one of the barges and was like suing the state let him live there as a squatter.
I love when people do that. Oh,
it was like, and I was at first I was like, okay, one, I'm fucked. Like if he actually does own this, I'm fucked because I'm basically burglarizing his house. but on the other hand, I doubt he actually owns this. So we literally just sat down and we were.
So you killed him?
No. Better than we just sat down and talked about like old airplane engines, and I was like, do you know what a Wankel engine is? And he's like, yeah, I do. And I'm like, they're so cool, right? And we just talk about like old plane engines for like an hour, and then he's like, okay, y'all can just leave. And I was just like, yeah, your welding stuff's over there, your speakers are over there, we unchained the plane. And he was like, you fucking, and we just bailed at that point because we didn't want to deal with it. But it turns out he worked at the port, like he was a longshoreman at the port, and ran into me a couple of days later when I was coming back for practice. And he's just like, oh, you fucker. Like, get over here. And I dip. I'm like, no. And he goes, like, waits for me, like, for 2 hours on the shore while I'm out in a boat rowing. And I'm, like, sweating bullets. I'm like, this guy's going to kill me. This guy's got, like, a fucking knife. He's just going to gut me. But, yeah, urban exploration is, like, that is probably like the memory that has like created the basis for who I am now. Like, wow. Burglarizing some sad old longshoreman.
You know what's funny is like we when Brett and I did our pictures so that we could send them to like newspapers and shit like that. Now we use as a live picture. I'm really ashamed because we have like all these really great pictures. And there was a dumpster that I saw once that had an Anarchy Circle A on it. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to fucking take pictures.
The dumpster.
I wish. Yeah. I wanted to take pictures in the dumpster. And we were like fucking around and playing in the dumpster and taking pictures and shit. And this fucking guy came out and he wanted to fight us for being, it was in an apartment complex in an alley. And he was just so fucking mad about us like messing around in a dumpster.
Sir, who gave you permission to...
It is illegal to pick trash. It is like illegal everywhere, pretty much, to pick trash. Like,
really?
That's a thing you're not allowed to really do anymore.
What?
Yeah, we'll go out cut some of the profits.
Well, yeah,
like, you know, like, supermarkets throw out insane amounts of food, and you're not. They like lock up the dumpsters, and you can be caught for trespassing and shit if you try to take the food.
It's fucking trash. What the hell?
Yeah. I know. Some people just fucking care more about trash than I don't know. I think they just hate. People, so you'd have to hate people so much to like lock up your trash so people can't eat it.
Yeah, that's
literally our valuing like rotting trash over like a meal for this dude.
It's like all of a sudden you're like, this is my trash. No,
you know what? You You know what? Yeah, I own this trash. It belongs to me.
Go to the dump and pick it up. They lock the dump. You just can't pick trash. It's
God
not,
damn it. Well, it's yeah, that's really the thing.
Frowned upon.
This was a dump, basically, that I broke into. And I was like, I'm sure this is a dump. It's like signed that this is a dump. There's like signs everywhere. Yeah. I didn't know that that was illegal. I was just figuring, you know, it's a dump. Who the fuck cares?
We have these like really great guys that come and pick stuff up out of the alleys that you can just put outside. And I think that's legal. Like a lot. And like, I'll, if I want to get rid of like a dryer or something, I can put it out in the alley and it'll be gone.
Yeah, we
just like mice in the night. Just
growing up, whenever we had like a piece of furniture or something to throw away, like you would just put it on the curb and turn around, and by before you got to your door, it would be gone.
Yeah,
it was, like, I mean, yeah, that's like a thing in like suburbs now. There'll just be like wardrobes on the street that just say free, and like every piece of furniture I own is I got that way. Like it's just
I'm not ashamed to grab anything off the street.
Yeah, no, I mean, I got this huge, it's like 1.5 inch thick wood. It's gorgeous. This desk. And the only thing is it's got like an iron print on it. Like someone put a hot iron on it.
That's character.
And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. This is great. And we tried to ram it in the back of someone's Prius. And it's like the desk is like literally the size of the car. And you're like, if we just we left the trunk open and like tied it down, it was a mess. But I eventually got it home and now I have it. It
like a Brontosaurus rib from the Flintstones. It's just like flipping Prius over.
Yeah, I mean, but you could feel driving it that like, okay, like the ass of this car is about to like hit the ground. We're gonna flip over. The front wheels are gonna be spinning in the air.
My wife makes me pick that stuff up off the curb. Like if we drive by like a chair sitting outside, she's like, please go back and get that for me.
my wife would make me do that. I learned something funny. The last time I moved, I had a fucking enormous, like the last CRT TV that was ever made was like a 40 inch and it was like 180 pounds. And I like put it outside and nobody would take it. And I'm like, well, what the fuck do I do with this TV? So like, and like, you can't throw it out. Like garbage places don't take it. It has to be like disposed of. So I called like Best Buy and they're like, well, yeah, you can bring it by, but we like charge $20 to get rid of it. I'm like, I'm not paying $20 to get rid of a TV. Like, this is nonsense.
They're usually like recycling drives where they like strip the gold out of stuff, like electronics. But those are usually only in like bougie neighborhoods that are like, we're pulling gold out of poor people's shit.
Yeah, where people have like printers and stuff like that. And they're just
yeah.
But they I have a big TV in my basement that I still haven't got. I have three dryers and a big TV in my basement. And like Brett makes fun of me all the fucking time because I have just like this graveyard of shit that I can't get rid of because I'm not willing to carry it upstairs.
You ever been in an old person's house, dude?
Yes, very like a lot of them.
Man, with just like, I mean, I love it. You can go in there and they love talking about the shit they have there. Because you'll go through and they'll be like, oh, yeah, I picked that up in, 1950?
Well, like, being the old man that I am, I love watching American Pickers. So
I hate those guys, but I love that show.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm at.
What they do sucks, man, because they'll be like, what they do sucks so bad because you see them talk people down like out of these possessions that they have. You see them talk them down like no matter what they say, they'll be like $5. They're like, I don't know, how about $1.50? And the guy takes it. And then they sell them for like, then they show that they sell them for the markup that they sell them for. And I'm just like, oh, you fuckers.
Well, like, I'll give you $20 for this. And then they'll be like, all right. And then they show like, cha-ching, I got $80 for it. Like, come on, man.
I got $80 for this, this new, GT that I just donated to these nice folks. I mean, like just getting like kind of a theory about that. You know, fuck middlemen, but also like that is basically the kind of like glorification of what all capitalism is. Basically, like all capitalism is just somebody taking like some poor person's old shit and selling it for millions and millions more than that poor person could ever have done. But like you got to make that seem cool. So you get like a bunch of like slimy assholes to like get on television and be like, we're flipping people's possessions.
Oh, house flippers.
History Channel. I think like the thing is like History Channel's where American Pickers is from. It's where fucking Pawn Stars is from. Like they made this show, and I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's on Netflix, actually, if you ever want to like get real fired up. But it's called The Men Who Built America.
Oh, that's definitely going to be a very tasteful journey through American history.
I can yeah, sure. sure.
It's like Andrew Carnegie, and it's all J.P. Morgan.
It's not like the Japanese.
Are you kidding me?
And the no, black slaves.
It's about
no,
it's,
the men who
it's
built
not
America.
About the and workers.
It's a 30-hour videotape of like a field where like people are just dropping dead in like summer heat, picking cotton. And yeah. It's like the men who built America. It's just a loop of 20 people just getting shot on a sharecropper farm.
Yeah, this has 8.7 out of 10 on IMDb, and the description I'll give for you guys is Cornelius Vanderbilt, John D. Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, and Henry Ford are names synonymous with innovation and big business in America.
I want to kill myself right now.
They all built empires and created advances in technology. They helped shape the country in its early days by doing such things as helping developing the models for modern railroads, creating the modern financial system, and making cars accessible to the masses.
Y'all remember how fun it was building railroads and how like everybody got to participate? It's a fun time.
I can't believe they got away with like I never hear people talk about it, and I watched it for
it's so disgusting.
I watched it for 15 minutes one night with my wife, and I was just like red hot, and I was yelling the whole time. She's like, "You gotta fucking turn the channel, man." I was so fucking mad.
I love divorce. Yeah.
It's so divorced from the reality of like just people with no alternatives. And like building of the railroad across America, like there was nothing there. Like they were living in these camp towns, making like a dollar a day to hammer spikes in like 100-degree heat. Like I can't. Like why are those probably those are not the stars of the show?
Well, wait, they did it too. There were people there. They were just Indians, and you could like butcher them wholesale. No one gave a shit.
And like, but those people that were going out there and actually driving the nails for the railroad. They built America. Like the, yeah. that's who this show would have
been. It's just because the kind of people who make TV shows are the kind of people who wish that the pores could be liquidated into Soylent. So like it's not a big surprise that they are basically like sucking Ayn Rand's dick here. But
yeah,
like again, you like picked literally the worst people on the planet too.
Yeah, the people that they actually talk to about them, like when you get to the end, it says this series profiles the lives of these early visionaries and includes perspectives from such modern business icons as Mark Cuban, Alan Greenspan, T. Boone Pickens, and Jack Welch.
Oh my God! Just put all of them in a room and just blow it up. Like it would make the world a better place.
They should have a man who built men who built America, and it's just everybody who ever like attempted an assassination.
Heroes of America. And it's
Heroes of America. It's the guy who like tried to kill Garfield and like drank milk obsessively, and just like he lives in his. Actually, I remember in history class we watched a video about him, and the guy playing him was like kind of like twitchy and like drinking milk in his attic. And I'm like, no, fuck you. This guy should have like banners up for him. Like we should be celebrating this man in the streets every day.
I admire anybody who's like shot a president. I'm just gonna say it.
Okay.
Lee Harvey Oswald did nothing wrong. Honestly, though,
I just recently talked to somebody about this.
JFK it's good practice.
JFK is a dick. Like he raped a lot of people.
I'm not a fan.
He was the Bill Clinton of the '60s.
Yeah, except that like Bill Clinton didn't get shot, so we kind of view him like less positively.
Yeah.
I think you got to imagine if Bill Clinton got shot during the impeachment trial, and like everybody's like, we got to drop this. This is a national tragedy. Like, we got to remember the man who was not the man who
still are doing that. Basically,
man who got welfare and instituted the crime bill that destroyed so many neighborhoods.
I mean, the guy who accelerated the Cold War to nearly the point of nuclear. Like, if he wasn't shot, we would have launched nukes probably. Like, the guy was out of his goddamn mind. Not Clinton. JFK.
Well, Bill Clinton was too, though. I mean, he was doing.
Kosovo is not real. Kosovo is not real. Sarajevo, dope. I love encouraging people to go to war and then sending NATO in to like street sweep entire cities. Tight shit. And then once you've learned the lessons from Sarajevo and you're like, I know urban conflict now, I know all these wars, then you can apply those to places where it really matters, like the Middle East.
Yeah. Didn't work, guys. He was a bad boy. He was a bad boy. My wife used to love him, right? And it took me a really long time to get her to see that he's terrible.
You can talk to old people about him and they're like, yeah, he's bad because he was a scoundrel. And I'm like, yes, but like there's more to this.
This has been like a through line lately with me, but like I think kids don't like, I think that kids not liking the president right now puts them ahead of us. Like, yes. Dude, so many ways.
I'm so excited for this next generation because I love their fucking, like, their ironic detachment and their, like, their complete disdain for the traditions of the past. Like, they just don't give a shit about, like, perceived authority or the nostalgia of baby boomers. They're just like, our life is fucked because of you, and we get your guts, and we're just going to ironically shitpost about it until you all die.
As an official young person, I'm just taking this all with like a beaming smile.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, like
I mean, even
younger than me, people like very young in like school still. You know, like there's a lot. I mean, assuming that they're not like video gamers who are just like scum. they're not people. But like aside from them, most young people pretty much hate. Pretty much all the like they hate elections because all that they've known is like elections are these insane circuses where everybody, all adults, start screaming at each other for 2 months and turn into like pissing infants.
I mean, that's all I know of them as at this point.
I remember when Obama was first elected, and I was like, I was in like school and I was talking with people, and everybody was kind of just like, yeah, my family supports Obama, but I don't really care because this whole thing seems kind of stupid to me. Why don't we just, like, you know, talk about something else? And it's just like they totally don't give a shit about politics. They will not come out to vote for, like, some asshole who's like, let's help the big businesses try to do this. And the kids who do that are like instantly hated by everyone.
Yeah,
they're college Republicans.
Yeah, everybody hates college Republicans because they're like, they're your dad. They're like, they're your prick parents who like yell at you about like financial responsibility. And you're like, fuck you, mom. I'm buying blow on the weekends. I don't need responsibility. And they're like, no, we have to lower the tax rate because we got to help John Vanderbilt the 13th establish the Hyperloop to San Diego.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, even kids, my kid's 12 and hates the president. Like, it's just,
hell yeah.
This guy has... Like, really, when I was a kid, you didn't hate the president, okay?
You got little pictures of him. Damn.
Yeah. I mean, I like...
When I was a kid, we were still saying the Pledge of Allegiance in school. Well,
they still do that. When I was a kid...
No, but the kids love sitting down for that shit now. I talk to my younger siblings, and they're like, yeah, you know, it's kind of dumb. You know, I just sit down. I'm a total badass.
You know what's funny is I did that too, and I got in a lot of trouble every time. And I would just be like, I don't believe in America.
we always put that voice on, that, but that's true. That kid is fucking awesome.
I was just trying to be bad. That was like, I mean, I even came to respect America there for a little bit. You know, I don't think I truly started hating presidents until, I mean, right when we started doing Street Fight, when, because this happens like, so Brett and I don't even know each other, really. We just do a show together, and the only time we ever talk is on mics, and we have two other people. Yeah, and we had two other people on the show. We weren't like friends or anything. We were just this in 2008. And about 3 months after the election, I was outside talking to him and a couple of our other friends, and I was just like, this fucking Obama sucks, man. He's not doing fucking anything. I thought he was going to do so much, and he's just not doing anything. And Brett was like, you need to fucking chill out, man. It's only been 3 months, okay? And then 3 months later, Brett was like, this fucking Obama sucks. So it's
like
took
a sad like, trombone playing in the
and then it's like, wait a minute. You know, like when it's weird because I said I've been reading anarchists and I kind of like everything that they say.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've matured a little bit past because some of the anarchists are like fucking, you know, like Rothbard wants to let you sell your kids and shit. not like that kind of anarchist.
I love going to Mises.org and fucking getting that link for the child market and giving it to libertarians and ANCAPs and shit. And like, they just fall all over themselves trying to explain why you're an asshole for showing that to them.
Because all ANCAPs and libertarians are children. They don't feel particularly affected by that because they're just like, yeah, you could buy me, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's I think
fucking, that...
Republicans though, the whole alt-right thing is basically their kind of twisted response to like the government sucks. Nothing really worked. Like their response is like, then we need to become like Vikings or whatever. Yeah. Like, we need to start role-playing as like, Ragnarok or like, you know, like
pure blood Nordic warriors. Yeah.
They revert to like D&D tabletop, but for
high school MMA.
Yeah.
Oh god.
Takes
yeah,
but, over I mean, the nation.
They're not like, we gotta defend Paul Ryan from this defacement he's experiencing in the
base Jeff Sessions.
Yeah, nobody can. I mean, they'll do memes about like Trump and Pence, but that's only as like metaphors for like what they think they're gonna do. When Pence comes on stage and is like, I have undying support for Israel and will sacrifice my children to him, like they're not gonna say anything. They don't give a shit. They're like, whatever, not a big deal, even though they hate Israel. Like, they're just kind of living vicariously through two dudes and then rejecting the rest of the system entirely.
Yeah, I think I don't think anybody. I'm hoping that anybody, because people from my generation are lost. I can promise. I'm 38 years old. None of them can be saved except
Gen X is a psyop invented by the baby boomers to destabilize millennial culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's
I don't think here. But these are lies, right? Like what I'm saying is that like people weren't rebellious. Like my friends and stuff that I grew up with were pretty rebellious at the time. Like didn't have like the people I hung out with didn't have like respect for the nation or anything like that. But 9/11 happened in my life.
Everybody just kind of, their dick gets a little hard, their hand goes straight to the eye, like saluting the flag immediately.
Yeah, but it was scary though. 9/11 was fucking super
it
scary.
It was. How old were you when 9/11 happened, Molly?
I'm not going to like explicitly say, but I was not pre-literate, but I was a baby boy.
You were pretty young. Okay. Because like I remember like it was fucking surreal.
I was in New York. My dad worked like in not the Twin Towers, but like in one of the buildings there, because he works in bank regulation. And I remember we were there, and my experience was, well, yesterday everybody was doing okay, and now everybody seems really sad. Something happened, and then like a month later, someone tells me, because like no one's gonna tell like a little kid like, oh, yeah, 3,000 people just died. Like, yeah. It was just kind of like this delayed thing. And then someone's like, oh, yeah, that like a month ago when everybody got really sad all of a sudden, it was because like 3,000 people died. And it was like, what the fuck? No one told me?
I was
like foul-mouthed toddler Malloy.
I was working in a call center.
Yeah.
And the guy next to me.
Oh, God.
And like, I didn't really panic at first. It didn't seem, this sounds bad, but it didn't seem like a big deal. The guy was just like, a plane flew into the building. And then about... after the other one flew in, about an hour later, there was a guy next to me that was like Googling gun purchasing. Like,
oh, God. Like,
we got to get some fucking guns, man. There's some shit going down out here. They can't even, they're not going to ship it to you before. terrorists come and get you.
Yeah, you're gonna have to go Amazon to a gun store.
Does not exist yet.
You're gonna have to go to a gun store and throw a trash can through the window. Like, that's where.
Yeah. See, that would be a cool response to like terrorism's happening. What do? It's like I immediately take up arms and like defend my. But instead, everybody just kind of like we trust President Bush now.
It was crazy. He'll pull through. That was. I can't believe how much I like if somebody said something bad about him, I'd be like, you got to respect that man. Okay. He did what he had to do.
It may not look like it, but my man going through a lot right now.
Stay the course. Stay the course.
Yeah. I mean,
story. I was cutting high school. I was ditching and I was fucking playing a dumb video game and listening to Howard Stern and Howard Stern is just like, you know, talking about like tits and asses or whatever. And all of a sudden he goes like, what? A plane crashed into it? And it was just like, that was the kickoff to the most surreal day ever.
Yeah, it was fucking wild. And like, it even took me probably till like 2006 before I was like, no, this this nationalism's not good. I don't like any of this, you know?
Yeah.
And I went through a George W. Bush, Ron Paul, and then Obama, then fucking insurrectionary anarchist.
Hell yeah.
You got to go through a Ron Paul state. Ron Paul is like anti-woke. It's when you pull back a spring to like shoot it forward. You got to go way like stupid as hell to start flying forward. I'm woke now.
I have an old email where I contributed $10 to the Ron Paul campaign. That's like a badge of shame.
Email you say.
I had a sign in my wall. I had this sign in my window. Like I had a sign. I paid for a Ron Paul sign.
I remember when
you have like a giant Ron Paul like poster hang on your ceiling that you lay underneath.
Yeah. I'm happy it turned out this way. Like Ron Paul's like Ron Paul was like an unwoke Bernie where he got like Bernie was like got a bunch of kids talking about like income inequality and why you know like banks suck and Ron Paul got kids talking about why like fiat currency isn't real and why the Fed is bad and like why the what the Rothschild
why did the family Fed?
What the Rothschild family is and like all these kids are kind of wandering around like opening their mouths and just like you know the gold is actually real and fiat currency is it and everybody just goes yes it is known. It's so fucking amazing.
Yeah, the hold on call thing.
He leaned a lot in 2007 and 2008. He leaned a lot on the weed shit. And
that's the thing. You're libertarian. You have one trump card that you can pull on Republicans. Like you're just like, yeah, oh yeah. You think that being a middle of the 1800s sort of reactionary market economy sucks. Guess what? We have fucking weed, dude.
Bam! Also,
boom. It helps. Like when you're a fucking dumbass idiot and somebody is like, we're going to legalize weed. You're like, I want to vote for that guy.
The thing is, libertarians know that the version of the world they've got planned is like hell on earth. So they are like, we're going to give them a literal opiate of the masses to like get them.
We need to leave. We need to open the floodgates on these drugs.
Their vision of the future is like everyone is like a wage slave in a literal sense. You live for script, but you can use that script to buy company weed.
Yeah, that's, I mean, how I feel. I feel like I could use a little weed allowance from the government right now. That would fucking work very well for me.
BP oil, which will begin like turning human bodies into gasoline, will give you like a 3 gram a day allowance before you're pulverized into petrol.
That's
my vision of America in 2036 when Ron Paul's like reanimated corpse runs and wins the presidency.
I mean, a guy yesterday posted an anti-Trump thing on my Facebook on Facebook on my feed. He posts some anti-Trump thing, and anytime you do that when you're from where I'm from, somebody wants to argue with you every fucking
hell yeah
time. And he posts this thing, somebody's arguing with him. You know how you can only see the last comment when you, I didn't click on the comments, and the last comment was him responding to somebody by saying like, "Wake me up when Ron Paul's or when Rand Paul's president." And I'm like, "Fuck, people like this guy." There's just this certain groups of people that are like, "I like Rand Paul talks real reasonable to me."
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we're living in a world where, like, I was talking with my aunt who's like really old Greek immigrant, like isn't really wise to a lot of American politics, but she said something that really stuck with me when this was like pre-election. I was talking with her and she's like, you know, I don't know who I'm going to vote for. I like Trump, but you know, that Bernie guy, you know, I like him too. And I'm just like, this was like while the primaries were still going on. And I was like, what about like Ryan or Cruz or any of those like replaceable weirdos? And she's like, no, just, I like Bernie and Trump. And
I went to,
wow. Like, people just will like attach themselves to anybody who doesn't sound like a fucking like cloth suit full of like straw.
I went to a thing with Matt Chrisman from Defending the American Dream Summit in Columbus. They came through here and they had Jeb Bush, Bobby Jindal, and John Taffer gave speeches at this thing. And we went for John Taffer. But like when Jeb Bush was up there, the people sitting next to me, like these hardcore, it was an Americans for Prosperity convention. So everybody,
best kind of people,
everybody there is like a business Republican, like that, like just, it's all the business types. And she's just sitting next to me like, this Jeb Bush just doesn't have it. And I'm like, you're inspired
low
by
energy.
Yeah. And then later on, though, Bobby Jindal gave a speech and everybody treated him like he was fucking like out there just cutting a wrestling promo, like he was the Ultimate Warrior or something. Like they were so amped for him. And I was like, he's a geek too, man.
That's the thing. Like, you, these people's personalities are basically like, I mean, they're fake, but like not even like wrestling is fake kind of fake. They're like patently like weird alien people with like more money than you'll ever see in your life, and you're supposed to like pick from that, like, which one of these guys really reverberates with me? It's like, not that one. That one's too tired sounding for me. I like my insane plurocrat to sound like energetic about like making me break rocks for 4 years.
Yeah, like, you're exactly right too, because even Bernie, you as you were saying, Bernie is even that kind of that, like, he just sounds like he's popping off, man. And people like it. People are attracted to anybody who pops off in public.
Oh yeah, all you need to win a presidency is like a voice that doesn't sound like you're about to fall asleep, and like $1 billion.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, this is a little bit more into like some shit I've been reading, but like, if you look at my theory, my personal theory is we live now in a country that looks like what the Soviet Union looked like to Americans, right? Like, constant surveillance on everybody. The government is like totally disconnected from the people. Nobody like knows what they're doing or cares. People basically just assume they have nothing to do with the government whatsoever, and it just kind of does itself. But the other thing is, like, we're run by old people, like, not just old, like, oh, you know, like politicians are a certain age, like they're in their 40s or 50s or something, but like Donald Trump is the oldest person who's ever been president. Hillary Clinton was the second oldest person who ever would have been president. Bernie Sanders would have been the oldest president. Like, why the fuck are all of our politicians like these fucking like octogenarians?
People that you could argue have a lot less to lose than everybody else that they're governing. It's like, fuck it, I don't care about climate change. I'll be dead before it affects me.
I mean, yeah, my dad's not even like that old, and he's like, you know, climate change is gonna be not my problem. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it isn't gonna be your problem, but it's gonna be my problem. And, you know, like, don't blow this for me, dude.
Well, people have been able to also, I was having a conversation with somebody last week. He's a person who's also a flat earther. So, you know, don't think that like it's he's like a genius, but he kind of feels like all you can do out there is just go and be the best you can be for everybody. And raise your family right and fuck everything else, you know?
Yeah.
And in the conversation, I was like, ah, dude, he's like, the two things that matter to me are my family's happiness and my happiness, basically. You just like, if I can make them happy, then they're going to be better on the world. And I'm like, ah, yeah, but I mean, a community, a good community should also be like very equal in those goals. It's so, that individualist streak is so fucking weird to me that when they knock it down to the family and they don't think that like having a, also focusing somehow on making the community around you better and more rich. Yeah.
That, it's like that's not good.
Yeah. There,
to be a libertarian, you literally have to be either a kid or like an unfuckable person, because you can never have like, you never like structure your life around your family, like making sacrifices for your family or like your community or something. If you literally believe like I am the only important thing, all my moral beliefs are centered around like making my life perfect. Like you can't do that. It doesn't make any sense. Libertarians just are completely incoherent.
I agree with that, Malloy.
Marcus, Marcus, welcome back.
Thank you. My my amazing capitalist provided cable connection shit the bed.
Bye, hey.
I don't know what the fuck I pay $120 a month for.
It happens every time, man. Every time you do one of these, like either one person keeps getting disconnected or other, you know what I mean?
I like what I came back to, just shitting on libertarians, though.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't hate them. I think that there are probably street fight fans that consider themselves libertarians, because I think I do have that streak. I mean,
everybody in America has the basic thing where like I could live in the woods and run my own life, but then you that's your baseline. You then realize like, wait, but I kind of want to like not be a recluse, you know?
Yeah.
I kind of want to like meet people.
I think the freedom thing is really intoxicating, man. Like, and when people use that rhetoric, even though it's not true, it's like they're guaranteeing you freedom from like the government giving you health insurance or something like that,
freedom,
like forcing you to have it. But they're not, I mean, they don't care about how much time your employer takes up and things like that.
Their vision of freedom is just like hell on earth. Like their vision of freedom is like you live in like a perfectly flat plane where nothing ever affects you and you don't affect anything because you're free from everything. It's like,
well, if somebody flies over your airspace, you get into your fucking MiG 5529 and shoot it down. But if they didn't negotiate airspace travel beforehand.
God.
Everything is private contracts between individuals, which is why airlines should not exist. They violate my airspace every day. And if only fucking Obama would let me strap into my anti-aircraft gun, I could have this whole mess taken care of by next week.
And you know, even the NAP is like their way to be like, okay, this is why you have to be decent. We all agree to the non-aggression principle. Like, that's the way.
Like, what the fuck is that going to do? Like, they don't make any sense at all, but they do if you're like,
if you're not paying like any attention or even if like, because they really can word things to make them sound very attractive.
Yeah, that would be the entire like Ayn Rand.
They picture their future as Demolition Man. Yeah. Like everyone's just a pussy who doesn't fight. And
I like that. I mean, I would almost like that. I mean,
the thing is they love like violent rhetoric, though. They love being like angry, angsty man who's like, fuck women, fuck the government. I do what I want when I want, man. I'm living my own life. But then also are like subscribing to a philosophy of your entire life that basically says like you have to be the biggest fucking bitch on the planet and never interact with anyone violently. You can never be mean to anybody, and like, I don't know, get a fucking brain. Fucking
get a brain, Moran. Yeah.
Hello, libertarian. Hello, stinky libertarian.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, for me it's like that liberty thing, it sucks because like I think of it in a more holistic way, but like I feel like it's it's super important. It's maybe more important to me than it is for like a lot of even communists. You know what I mean? Although a lot of communists I talk to even are like, you know, you'd work less hours and you would have time to pursue the things that you want to do, which that sounds perfect to me. That sounds like freedom to me.
Well, welcome. A lot of what they miss is that like the society we live in and have like abundance is based on violating the NAP very severely on people all around the world.
Very true.
If you want to live a libertarian lifestyle, you can do that in practically any part of the third world. All you need is like a gun and a threatening personality, and you can make anybody do anything in a place that doesn't really have a lot of police.
I mean, your own personal Fallout game.
The thing is they're racist as well, so they don't like to go they don't want to go to like Detroit and like deal with black people. They're like, no, I need to have the ability to do whatever I want in my nice white community.
In Nebraska. Like, I need to be allowed. I mean, really, I always say that. Like, let's just give them, like, they want Nebraska. You know what I mean? They're not even asking for any of the good.
The Nebraska containment zone. Yeah. It's luck. Actually, no, they want New Hampshire. They've all moved to New Hampshire recently.
They're trying to expropriate.
They were successful.
Were they?
No, they moved 10,000 libertarians to, they moved 10,000 people to New Hampshire, and they're all living there and voting, and they like turned the ballot in a lot of places.
They probably, that's good for them, you know? if they're not fucking up anybody else's life, then that's fucking good news.
I mean, they're fucking up the life of like normal people living in New Hampshire, but like how many normal people live in New Hampshire? Let's be real. Yeah.
It's a Stephen King movie.
I love that live free or die is like the coolest fucking thing that like you could ever say, and it's for the most conservative state.
It's like, live free or die, like because they're like they walk into a Walmart and they got the wrong bedazzled jeans, and they're like, look, you have to take these back. live free or die.
It sounds like it is the name of a movie, Live Free or Die Hard, but
yeah, add the hard on there. I would like to have that license plate like the movie poster.
yeah that would be great, man.
That's the libertarian dream.
That's my
dream. You can have whatever vanity plate you want, and they don't even cost extra.
Fuck yeah.
They have a lot of them here. I mean, you can get at pretty much any football team.
Someone in our group chat is getting Marxism as their, or Marxist as their license plate.
Are they in
the South.
Yeah, in the
South. Oh, boy.
That's going to go over like really well.
I mean, if they're in a city in the South, though, I always think that everybody we talk to on any of the shows, like, so when I do the third show, when I do somebody else's podcast, I just assume that all of you live in, like, the middle of the city, because everybody I know does. And I don't know how
they all live in New York City. Like, as, you know, okay, the Chapo guys, you know, whatever, they're making their own way. But all the ancillary people, like,
New York is not real. No one actually lives there. It's fake.
That's where I'm going to have to come down. That whole city
is fucked up. I'm working on a zine for May. I believe the May zine is called The Hustler's Handbook, and I've leaned really hard on all my friends from New York to write things for me to tell them how they hustled money, because like I just can't picture myself being able to live there ever, because the cost of living is so, I mean, it's not low here, but it's closer to fucking, my apartment's $980 a month, you know what I mean?
Dude, I live out in the sticks with a basement. I live out in the sticks. You can rent an entire like 4-bedroom house for like $1,500.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
A month.
That's
the cost of an apartment in San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, not even in San Francisco, in like some shitty, like 50 miles out of town suburb of San Francisco.
I mean, Brett had like a really tough, like he calls it economic agoraphobia, but when he lived in fucking Virginia there near the end, the motherfucker was just miserable. He never left his house because it cost $60 to leave your house. Oh, God. And like, he just didn't have money. They were just so broke before he moved back to Columbus. And it's like, I don't know how people live in cities like that. Even when I, when we go out of town to like Chicago and even Pittsburgh, I'm like, shit, everything's fucking expensive outside of my city.
I lived in Chicago suburbs, and like a small two bedroom apartment was like $1,300, and like a date night at the movies was like, you were breaking 100 and getting like $20 back if you were lucky. Like, it was insane.
Yeah, because I mean, like, right, you have to take the metro or you have to park. And that,
yeah, I'm a stingy money motherfucker. I don't own a car, and I probably won't for like most of my life. Because like, you know, I walk places, and you know, most, it's actually another thing, like most of the young people I know are either like, they're buying like really shitty old cars, they're just like I'm walking everywhere. Like, I'm just going to walk to work. I'm going to walk to all these places.
I would never buy a new car. Like, it's, to me, it's the dumbest thing you can possibly do, but somebody,
I have friends who like love cars, and no offense to them, but that's the stupidest fucking hobby to have.
I will say this, like, when I was younger, I bought a lot of fucking old cars, and like had a lot of really fucking bad experiences with old cars. And I was like, I will never fucking drive an old car again. My car's used, but it's a 2015. So yeah, it's like, that is fine with me. Cause I mean, like, when you're, I mean, like, I used to have to, there's probably a crapshoot on whether my wife was going to make it into work or not. A lot of times.
My dad like had the best philosophy. He would never pay more than $1,000 for a car, and he would just drive it into the fucking ground. And like, if it lasted basically like 2 years, he'd be like, this is the greatest car ever. This is fucking amazing.
That was kind of how we act. My wife, when we first started dating, she had a Nova, a 76 Nova, and we drove that until it fucking, I mean, I was driving it one day and a part fell off the bottom and sparks started coming up through the fucking floorboards, like, because there were holes and rusted out holes in the floorboards. But it was like, after we got rid of it, we had had it for a year, and I was like, well, we got our money's worth out of it. But like, they did, like,
that's amazing.
Like, I bought a car from a buy here pay. I bought a Grand Am from a buy here pay here. Oh. That three of the engine mounts were rusted through, and I had to get them replaced as soon as I kept taking it in there and saying, something's wrong with this fucking car, man. It keeps stalling, and they would do nothing and give it back and say, it's fine, I don't even see what the problem is, until somebody finally was like, the engine mounts are rusted, that's going to be $1,100. And I was already paying $136 a week for the car.
Buy here, pay here's are like the biggest, like, next to payday loans. Like, you pay like $4,000 down and $150 a month for like a 2012 piece of shit, and they prey on these kids with no credit. Like, I worked at Progressive Insurance, and I would get calls from these 20-year-olds, and they would be like, yeah, I'm getting a 2012 Mercedes. And like, and I would have to put it on their insurance, and like, their rate would go to like $450 a month, and they're paying $200 a week for the car. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I would try to talk them out of it at some point.
It's amazing how like there are these sort of like economic fiefdoms that like poor people live in, where like no one goes to a payday loan when they're like doing well. Nobody ever goes to a payday loan for like a good reason.
I mean,
or a check cashing place. If you're like,
the fuck is the point of that existing, other than it's like, fuck poor people, they'll pay us more.
I tried to explain to somebody once when I was living in Chicago burbs, like, I'm like, yeah, blah, 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 check cashing place. I'm like, what's a check cashing place? I'm like, really? Like, you go there, you hand them the check, they take 10%, you buy a bunch of lottery tickets, and then you leave.
But back when we did stand up regularly for open mic nights, Brett did a whole piece about going to payday advance places, because both of us had done it so much and fucking just loved using that concept on a stage in front of, and the nervous laughter, because like, you think, you're like, everybody's done a payday advance, but nobody's allowed to ever admit it. And like, man, those,
it's like
things,
it's like having an abortion or something.
I did payday advances. Every week when I got paid, I would get paid like $700, but I'd have to pay 520 or no, $575 to the payday advance place. So then I would go get, I'd have $200 left over. I'd pay my $136 car payment, and then I'd go get another $500 payday advance.
Oh, man, they had you, man.
Yeah, I did that for 2 years. Did that. Wow. Brett actually did it for like 2 or 3 years, and he did it at multiple places. So he had like a system set up.
Yeah, they'll call you. If you stop borrowing, they'll call, hey, coming in for a loan?
Yeah.
Mm, I haven't seen you in a while.
It's like your heroin dealer calling you because you haven't shown up. Like, are you dead and or would you like to re-up?
Yeah. It's like my wife was the first one to bring it up. Like, we were really broke. We wanted to go out to eat really bad. And it was just like, you know what? Fuck it, man. Those guys will just give us $100.
I remember
and
then having you conversations.
Well,
because especially when you're young and broke all the time, you know, it's like free money. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the buy here, pay here was the same thing, man. Like, them motherfuckers sat me down with a calendar and tried to work out my budget so that I could afford the car. They were like, well, you could eat less fast food and you could quit smoking. And I was like, fuck you, man.
You could panhandle. You could try panhandling. Yeah. You could prostitute yourself.
I mean, they were trying to put me in a car that was $245 a week.
Are you fucking kidding?
And I was just like, I will never be able to afford that.
I remember like when my wife and I first got married, and we just, you know, we were stupid young kids, 24, 25. We just spent all our money and got credit, blah, blah, blah. And when it got real, because in Colorado, they can take you to court for debt. And if they win the suit against you, they can then garnish your wages. And we had like, it was like this little, it was like maybe $200. And they filed it with an attorney. The debt attorney then tacks on like $700. And they actually sent somebody to my door with a summons on a Sunday morning. And I'm like, well, this is serious. Like, we
think, okay, wait. I think this is the crux of American politics. Libertarians see that situation and they get really mad, and they get mad at the court, not the company. Well,
they're really mad at the person who
they're in that situation, they get pissed off that the court is coming around demanding you pay and then garnishing your wages.
rather than mad
at the company that's like screwing you dead.
Yeah. Rather than the company sending goons to my house to like make me pay.
Fuck, that is a real good way to scare the shit out of you, though, is to send a dude to your house that hands you a piece of paper. It's like, I don't know. Yeah. I wouldn't answer the door. I don't answer the phone ever for anybody because I have so many bill collectors.
It was so weird. It was so bizarre. We got like super serious about paying debt and like managed to like kind of pull out of it. And, you know, like your life just becomes so much better. You don't realize how much desperation and anxiety is hanging around you at all times.
Once you use that tax return to pay off your payday advance debt and you can stop getting it, that is an incredible feeling.
Getting out of the matrix, basically. Yeah.
You're unplugged. Here's a pill. You can see how deep this rabbit hole goes. but like one of the most obnoxious fucking thing about like young bougie culture. I feel like right now I'm like the Brandon Wardell here. Like young people, man, they know how it is. But like if you look at sort of like the Reddit sphere of like financially responsible youths who are like, you know, I don't get my friends. They're just like, they keep buying cars and expensive stuff. Don't they understand that you need to save your money? I was learning
with Blade.
No. They're like literally, yeah. I was learning Keynesian economics while you were out buying food.
And it's I read like, Rich Dad, Poor Dad in the eighth grade.
There's this whole culture of like, 20 to 24 year old people who like get really sucked into this sort of like you invest like all of your money that you earn. You like if you get like $50,000 a year, you invest like $30,000 of it. You live at a $20,000 a year like house. You live like in poverty so that you can invest everything you make and then you can retire early, which is like, okay, that's like a solid idea, except they turn it into this fucking cult where they're like, no, you're not allowed to buy milkshakes. You can go to the fucking grocery store, you can buy milk and you can just drink milk and you can buy bulk milk from an importer, and then they'll be like, you know, they just like they grind their lives into fucking like hell, and not a single one of them asks like, maybe like I should be enjoying my life and not like turning myself into a slave to like my own retirement plan.
It's like a reverse, like, you know, if you quit doing all the fun stuff, you live longer. It's like a reverse of that. Like,
yeah.
Live like shit and don't have any fun, and a nice retirement.
They want to retire early, but they're also going to die like 20 years earlier, so it all cancels out.
Don't fucking retire early. Don't even, like, just make your job, try as hard as you can to make your job something you want to do till you die.
Yeah, exactly. Like, these people are like, I'm going to take whatever's the highest paying job so that I can retire out of it early. And I'm like, well, now that you've like broken your fucking brain and like you worship like your $3,000 a month that's going into like your Vanguard account to like invest it, like, what are you going to do when you retire? Like, what is your brain's idea of pleasure?
Exactly. Yeah,
you live like a monk, and then you're like,
pick up any hobbies out of the monastery.
Live like a monk,
and out of the monastery, and then that you get kicked out of the monastery. You're on the street, and you're like, so what do I do now? Like
Rumspringa.
Yeah, like on Rumspringa, but like into a world that like you're 40. Okay, you're 40 years old,
57 or 40 years old.
40 years old, right? You've got like $1 million, and you've given yourself like a salary, like from that. You get dividends or whatever. So you've got like maybe like $40,000 a year that you can spend. It's like, what do you do? Like, what is it that you want? Like, you're gonna take up a hobby, and then you're like, oh, I'm really invested in this.
Sorry, man, I gotta work. Maybe I should hang out on your fishing boat. I still have a
maybe,
job.
Maybe I should have, you know, spent the 20 years that I spend accumulating wealth aimlessly. Like, maybe I should have spent that time doing this thing that I like a lot. Because I mean, idiots.
I was very close to that. Like, I was very close to that kind of life, and I melted the fuck down, you know? Like, I was working at a cable company, which is a job you get, and you're supposed to keep it because it's a pretty fucking, it's a decent job for from where I came from, and you don't have if you don't have a college degree, and it was
that's one of those jobs like your mom's always, well, the cable company's hiring. Like, it's like you take it out of poverty.
Yeah, and like if I hadn't melted down, actually, if I hadn't got robbed for my keys and melted down over a year period, then I probably would still be just grinding in the cable company, trying to make a living. And now I get to like travel around and do shows and shit.
Interesting people and party.
Yeah.
We're moving. One of the things that's really interesting. So if you go back and watch like 90s films about like, my job's unfulfilling, I left my job and found a fulfilling life in like manual labor or whatever. You know, like that's sort of like job security is bad. And we got to move past that. That's kind of dead. Like you watch that and you're like, these assholes, you know, they had a $50,000 a year job with benefits and shit. And they're leaving that behind to like go fucking dig ditches.
Yeah.
Fuck that's you. Office space.
Like, and it's not- the office space now pisses you off because you're like, fuck you, dude. Like,
I mean, that good. That work is satisfying. I can say that, like that blue collar. When I think about communism,
no, but the thing is, it's satisfying. But you gotta like, if you're living in a capitalist system and your like goal is like, I want the most fulfilling life possible, and you're like, why don't I just become exploited labor and then just like, enjoy?
It's hard, being a peon. I worked in an office for like 4 years, and it's so mentally exhausting to work in a corporate office.
It sucks.
Blows.
You, I mean, like the Mike Rowe is a guy that talks about like makes blue collar work seem like it's like the most beautiful thing in the world. And all those people, I mean, at least in my
experience, that's why everybody becomes a farmhand. You know, like everybody goes out to California and starts digging up turnips in the fucking like 100-degree sun, right?
But
that's why it's like. Tons of people do that, right? No. Yeah, fucking nobody does, because nobody actually wants to.
He doesn't do service work. You know what I mean? He doesn't talk about people who do service or office jobs, because people think that like that's what keeps the minimum wage kind of low, is that like people just think that service workers and office workers don't deserve I mean, like a lot of people think office work is like a luxury fucking job. Working in a call center is a luxury job. You get to sit at a fucking desk. And it's like, man, everybody I know that works in an office is tormented by the office. They spend most of their time outside of work thinking about the office and worrying about who's trying to get them fired, or you know what I mean? Like everybody.
American job life, what is it, like work life ratio or whatever the like the phrase is, it's like it's non-existent. It's fucking insane how
there's no separation.
Yeah You are your job.
I even like when I started doing the zine and stuff and having to write it, I like started getting annoyed because I was like, man, now I got a job. This feels like
you got a deadline. You gave yourself a deadline.
I did give myself.
Well, I mean, the thing is, your idea of like the little hustles that like, you know, that's how you keep afloat. I think that's probably closer to what the like economy of the future, for, at least for working people, will be. Like, not like this monolithic, like holy altar of job that you have where you like, you clock in there and that's your job. It's like that plus like another thing plus another thing. Yeah. And like, not really like, oh, everybody's working part-time job, but like hustles that are sort of like tangential to the rest of your life. And like, on one hand, that's beneficial because like, as people realize that like, fuck it, I don't have to do like one thing, I can do more. They can like kind of eke out these little niches. But on another hand, like, it means they're constantly fucking working.
Yeah. You should be able to opt out. I guess like for me, I talk a lot about how much I hate driving for Lyft, and like it's been extra hard recently because we just did 2 sold out shows, and it's just like I can't go from standing on stage in front of all those people fucking killing to sitting in a fucking car getting yelled at by a college girl because I turned down the wrong street or something.
Oh God.
But like, I do think,
do you know who I am?
I am very happy though that that's there for me.
Yeah.
I want to be able to earn the money in that way so that I can keep pursuing this. You know what I mean? I can keep trying to do this until I'm making a living doing it. And right, like, look,
real motherfucking talk hours. Are you like, you've been doing this for 6 years. Are you looking at Chapa like, what the fuck?
Man? Nah, man. I love guys.
No, I know. But
I mean, like, here's the thing.
We must promote worker solidarity, Marcus. God damn it.
I know
they do so much.
Podcasters are workers too. The new Jacobin article, like, podcasters are the working class now.
God, hell yeah.
Well, they do so much for us. I mean, they don't have to do shows with us, live shows with us. You know what I mean? And we've done 3 together so far, and they've been very successful and very fun. And like, if Brett and I can't get over with their fans, then like, we don't deserve it. You know, that's why I took the, but that's
yeah,
why
we need
I took,
to find a, we need to suckle from the Joe Rogan tea.
That's why I took this. That's, I mean, really what happened was they started making the money that they make. They started making a living. Will quit his job. And I saw that and I was like, man, like all I've ever wanted was a community that I could be a part of. Instead of Street Fight was just Street Fight. That's all that was here in this space for 5 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just, we were the only thing, and people didn't really think. I could see where people would be like, nothing's going on there. Like, there's nothing going on in that part of the internet, or there's nothing going on. And then Chapo springs up, and then you guys are around. Francis is doing shows. Fucking the District Sentinel guys are doing stuff. And now it's perceived as, it's perceived as like this scene, and Chapo always gives us credit. They have always given us credit for like being there first. That's all you can really ask, man. And they shined a light on us, and I think we've been rising to the occasion. And if we didn't, we don't deserve to be here. I should be a teacher.
That's very libertarian of you.
Yeah.
And right. if I ever fail to meet production quota, I hope my boss kills me.
All right, guys, thank you for doing the show with me.
Thanks for having us on, man. Like, you're shining a light.
Yeah,
your shows and your Twitters, Chapo. Guys. Yeah.
I'm Marcus, Rip Marcus J on Twitter.
I'm Malloy, Malloy Boy, M Malloy Boy on Twitter. And me and Marcus host the Discourse Collective.
Yeah, give them the Twitter, because that's the easiest way to get.
Oh yeah. Just actually, the website's even easier. Our website. Fuckingcommies.com.
Okay. Commies.com, guys. Thank you for doing the show with me. It was really fun. We'll have to do it again.
Thank you so much, man.
All right.
That was sick. You should